It's really a great pleasure to be here. And concerning merging visions, really I would like to take you in the mid-2030s when the Athena X-ray Observatory and the LISA All Sky Monitor will be in place to observe the X-ray and gravitational wave sky. Athena and LISA science cases are individually outstanding. They aim at exploring the violent high redshift universe, but from very different perspectives. Athena aims at discovering very, very many quasars and active galactic nuclei, solitary, perhaps obscured, accreting black holes over a wide range of luminosities and R2 redshift as large as 8. By contrast, LISA, which will be the first ever mission to explore the low gravitational wave universe, will detect the signal at the moment of quiescence of black holes in the mass range, say between 10 to a few 10 to the 4 up to a few times 10 to the 7. Here it is the usual waterfall plot, redshift versus mass. LISA will really see all black holes across the entire universe to learn how black hole binary form in concordance to galaxy assembly. In my talk, I will really focus on the loudest low redshift sources that can be detected with an SNR in the thousands, and I will connect them to the dimmest X-ray sources, because these are little black holes, and so their even Eddington accretion luminosity is of around 10 to the 43 Ergs per second, just because I want to answer the following question: what can LISA and Athena do together? ESA appointed a joint working group, and I want to acknowledge all my key collaborations to understand which additional science can be performed if LISA and Athena work together, mainly to motivate anticipating the LISA launch, say 2 years after Athena launch, so the two missions can really work concurrently. And we submitted to the ESA director Gunther Hasinger a document which is still not published yet. We have to work a bit. I was excited when I was asked to do this job, because really it would be groundbreaking to detect the X-ray light and the gravitational wave radiation simultaneously during the violence of black hole mergers. And as I will show, it is indeed really a challenge against time, and indeed it is an uncharted territory, because we do not have any evidence yet of transient periodic and broadband AGN-like emission that could be attributed to a LISA quiescence event, which is consumed on a time scale of days or even hours when the SNR is getting very loud. We have then no observational guide as far as spectra and light curves are concerned, and we have to resort on beautiful theoretical models of gas dynamics around massive black holes close to merging. So the binary black holes has to be surrounded by a circumbinary accretion disk, and we decided to explore whether we could really detect the X-ray precursor during the in-spiral phase, hoping to correlate the X-ray periodicity pattern with the electromagnetic chirp. So when the binary, to give you an idea, has a separation of even less than 100 m, and then to focus on the post-merger phase, whether there is a disk X-ray rebrightening, a launch of a jet, at merger in act or hours of days when the new black hole has already formed. We have seen from Andrew's talk that during really the last phases of the merger, where when, let me say, the binary is circular, there is still a lot of gas surrounding the binary, even in the post-decoupling phase when the viscous timescale is longer than the gravitational wave timescale. The cavity contains considerable amount of gas. Black hole then remains surrounded by gas and are fed through streams in, from mini disk. So we expect periodicities commensurate to the fluid pattern, in particular the existence and the occurrence of this lump, which is creating a bit frequency between the Keplerian frequency of the lump and the binary orbital frequency. Let me stress the disks are no longer stationary. Numerical simulation have shown that the disks are depleted and replenished. The viscous time, the viscosity is not any longer sort of controlling the accretion rate across the horizon. And as the binary really is getting closer and closer, so the black hole are getting closer and closer, also I expect that the mini disk will be tidally truncated, so the outer disk of the disk will be, outer radius of the disk will be very close to ISCO, and this it really will depend very much on the spins that has not been considered yet in this scenario. So we don't know whether during the 20 hours before merging, and so we have the gravitational wave chirp, the X-ray luminosity that I've taken from Andrew is going to become dimmer and dimmer because of disk erosion, or maybe depending on the different mass ratio, you might have an electromagnetic rise of the emission, which is accompanying the gravitational wave chirp. Let me just tell that the spectrum can really be broad. You might have optical emission from the inner ring of the circumbinary disk. You might have from the hot gas, a corona, some emission in the X-rays, but really it is an enchanting problem because here you are in a time variable space-time, you have a relativistic Doppler, gravitational redshift, light bending, and so we really, as far as I understand, we have not a unique, say, template for the electromagnetic emission. Concerning the post-merger phase, I was just relying on this work by Kahn. Well, the black hole, the new black hole is certainly highly spinning, 0.7, and in this simulation, they have demonstrated that you can launch sort of outflows into the polar regions, that they can become really produce a jet, and they have seen a ramping up of the pointing luminosity and also of the electromagnetic luminosity. So this might be a general trend. The accretion rate onto the black hole is rising, then it drops really suddenly when you are near to the merger and rises again. So just to make life simple, I really realized that if we have an electromagnetic counterpart of a LISA event, this active nucleus has to be on not even months or years, decades or centuries before. And really, we would like to know the level of the luminosity we might be in this situation, and we would like to really to detect the periodicity patterns just during the late phases of the spiral that LISA see, and then just to see the post-merger phase. But we don't know whether the luminosity is going like this or it's going like this. And we would like to be really, we would like to know the level of variability, whether if we look in the X-ray, we have enough photons to make really solid statements on the variability patterns of the luminosity, either during the inspiral and during even the post-merger phase. Okay, so we decided to start considering what would be the observance strategy pre and post-merger, asking how early LISA can determine the parameters of the gravitational wave source in order then to inform Athena to slew and point into the field of view and spotlight. Let me remind you that on board of Athena, there is a wild field imager in this energy range. The field of view is about 0.4 square degrees, time resolution of 5 milliseconds, angular resolution of 5 arcseconds on axis, and the flux sensitivity, say, of 10 to the minus 16 in GGS units, with a slew rate of 4 degrees per second, so any target of opportunity in any random field can be recovered after a time which is of about 4 hours or less. So Athena can really, in 4 hours, point into a sky patch to search for light from a gravitational wave events. I was also told by Guainazzi et al. That I really suppose you have a gravitational wave event, Athena can cover 10 square degrees, so much bigger than the 0.4 square degree of the field of view, in 3 days with a raster scan of at least 23 observations in sequence of 10 kiloseconds each. Of course, if you have a brighter source, we can stay on a tile for a shorter time, and so the ability to sort of recover a region in the sky depends also on the luminosity that you would expect from the two massive black holes that are accreting through the mini disks. The flux limit that I was told is confusion noise. Okay, 100 kiloseconds. Okay, but it's almost here. I can show if this is here. So we then consider sort of a vanilla model because we really don't have any guide. And so we considered a binary of 10 to the 6 solar masses at redshift 1, Eddington limit with a Bolock metric correction in the X-rays of 0.3%. And this is the flux after 5 kiloseconds of exposure, but if you want to go to redshift 2, you are just reaching the limited sensitivity of Athena. You need 70 kiloseconds of exposure to say, I have detected the source, maybe not enough to make really analysis of the periodic patterns that can be imprinted in the X-ray luminosity. If the black hole is more massive, of course, you need less time. This is the red point is just for a source at redshift 2, and so these will be much easier to detect. But the key problem is that if we want to cover the sky area of Athena, we need really to select the loudest gravitational wave sources with SNR in the thousands, because this is the scaling of the uncertainty error in the sky. So really, if we want to perform joint observation, we need really to focus on very bright GW sources that are really X-ray dim, because we are just looking at sources at the limiting sensitivity of Athena. So we just simulated an ensemble of binaries with random sky position, orientation, spins, using the best waveform in the spirals portion of the signal, which contains richer harmonics that can maybe help localization. And then for the ring down, we just match the SNR with a Phenom C waveform. Let me show what we really are going to find. Here is how the SNR is growing with time. Let's focus on a binary of 10 to the 6 solar masses, mass ratio 1 to 3, at redshift, say, 1. So in about a month, the SNR, so a month before merger, the SNR, considering, all parameters that are characterizing the binary, is detected, and the signal-to-noise ratio rises rather slowly and really becomes really very, very large during the last hour when, let's say, the merger, really the merger is ongoing. And unfortunately, we don't have here, but I'm sure that the merger time can be determined quite precisely for these light sources. The SNR goes up to more than 1,000 at the end. Even 1 week before the merger in ACT, the chip mass and the mass ratio will be determined at, say, 10% or even 1% level for the chip mass, and they improve significantly across the spiral phase, really rather significantly, because these are really very loud sources. The luminosity distance 1 week before is still 10% uncertain for this particular case. Of course, closer binaries can be have a better parameter estimation. But here is what are our sky localization uncertainties. And the bottom line is that for most of the binary we have explored, in most of the cases, the field of view of Athena is recovered only just during the merger and not during the in-spiral phase. So Athena, I was told, can start tiling the sky 12 hours prior merging with a raster scan, but it really depends on the luminosity because it wants to return in several tiles to see if there is any periodicity, okay? And a preliminary analysis is telling us that only 0.1% of the sources could really be detected successfully during the in-spiral phase. Why 12 hours? Because I just summed the 8 hours of telemetry for LISA plus the 4 hours of LU of Athena. Okay. From the population, I can tell crudely, in a sense that we have to go into detail more, but the post-merger phase is really tracked beautifully because let me also emphasize something that I forgot emphasizing, that when you are just close to merger, the sky localization uncertainty for these very loud sources can be even 0.01 square degrees, so on arc minute scales. So really, we can pin down the source really pretty well. And while talking to Emanuele Berti, in reality, on a project that was taught quite a while ago, if you really fully exploit the power of higher harmonics, in the case you only see the signal from the very massive one that you just see just the final merger and ring down, because you don't even see the inspiral, you see just the bang that is coming from the collision of the two black holes. This is really in preparation, thanks to Vishal. Here I'm really pleased to show you that even black holes of 10 to the 7 can really have really a good Athena field of view, can be seen in the field of view, even out to redshift 0.5 or so. The strategy is that we can only see, possibly see the disk rebrightening, so maybe 4 hours or 8 hours after the merger. And so I really don't have any guide from how the spectrum should look like, maybe like an AGN one, but remember we have a spinning black hole, so we might have a leave, we might really, in the same month and years before, I'm sure that you can really go into the spotted field by Athena and other facilities to monitor what is going on in that region. 5 seconds, caveat. Well, in the absence of any periodicity during the spiral phase, it really would be difficult to identify the X-ray source, but really remember that we can tell X-ray astronomer, okay, that we have seen a black hole of 10 to the 6, plus 10 to the 6 with this spin, and so maybe we have a template of X-ray light curves to educate LISA for the we have problem in source confusion, so more than 2 sources or 3 sources could be in the final field of view, but we will have LSST and Erosita as a sky reference. Rates are very uncertain. There has been a live debate within our small community. We might see 10 merger in 10 years of operation, none, and if obscuration is there, it is a trouble. Thanks.
So on the subject of a prompt electromagnetic signature immediately after the merger, there have been discussions in the literature about the recoil changing the potential, causing shocks in the disk. And I'm wondering if that is going to be a fast enough response to the merger, and where the signal will come out electromagnetically, if there's a chance that Athena might see it if it's looking immediately after the merger.
So, well, that would be amazing. So the kicks depends on the mass ratio, on the spins, okay? If it is true that in average accreting black holes have high spins, probably even in during, not even the spiral, but during the secular and stationary accretion that Andrew was describing, you will really modify the spin. Maybe you lead to a sort of alignment, okay? And if the spin are large and the mass ratio is not too large, still you expect a significant recoil. But remember that the cavity and the gas around are really tightly bound, and so 10,000 kilometers per second. So I think that the black hole, the new black hole, will drag its own most bound fraction of the circumbinary disk. And so what he was really mentioning, that since there is a mass loss due to gravitational wave emission, the fluid has to adjust to the new potential. And also it's interesting to think at whether the recoil is in plane or off plane. If the spins are aligned, the recoil is in plane. So the black hole might really go through the disk. And so what is the signature, really? It's amazingly interesting and exciting whether Athena, which is likely the X-ray mission, will be there at the time. LISA will fly. That would amazing. But we really have to work hard in the next 10 years to do really simulations that are accurate enough to give prediction. And maybe it would be nice then to process the X-ray light curves and spectra through the Athena response, and also to prepare LISA people when they are making the parameter estimation to have X-ray templates. And also you have to consider that probably if there is a jet, there might be radio emission. And years after, you might have an afterglow, if any, in the impact of the jet into the interstellar medium. Remember, these black holes 10 to the 5, so it's not a blazar of 10 to the 9 where the jet is going out of the galaxy. So I want to work on this because I find it really fascinating.
Good. So I have a maybe slightly pessimistic comment here coming from the observation.
Elena.
Slide. Maybe Mike can go even further. These flexes are really challenging in terms of looking for periodicity is beyond optimism. We are talking in the best case scenario about a statistically significant detection with an instrument that is already 10 times more sensitive than current flying instruments. Mm-hmm. So that's the bad part. The more self-serving, perhaps, US perspective here is that if something like Lynx were to fly concurrently with LISA, then you have an improvement in terms of both avoiding source confusion and lowering the background. Okay, so then you gain maybe a factor of 2 up to 5, I guess, in terms of,
yes.
Which also means you can push your surge to somewhat higher redshifts.
Yes, well, just I was going through the Lynx book. It's amazing how deep it can go, Lynx. So it has a factor of 100 more
in
sensitivity. Well, it's a narrow field of view. so this is the point, but you would avoid the confusion.
But will likely be flying then, mm-hmm. and so you could use them in synergy, I guess, once you have identified a likely counterpart. Lynx can see, you know, have a much sharper.
Yes, because the beauty of the X-ray sky is that there are less galaxies than optical galaxies. So, well, you know the luminosity distance. So with these sources, we want to do fundamental tests of general relativity. So better when we are just, when LISA will be on fly, we really need, we have templates and we really need a very good data analysis processing to really disseminate knowledge to provide the parameters of the source. So that is fantastic. So I can tell you that there is a black hole of 10 to the 6 solar masses. So you know the guy you are dealing with, but then you don't know what is the accretion rate.
Just a quick response about the kick shock. So that'll be in the circumbinary disk, so it's at lower frequency. So something like in a UV telescope would be amazing for that, or maybe even into the optical, so simultaneously with Athena. That's probably
why you would
see.
Very X-ray centric. Yes. So UV wide field is, I think, also fantastic.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
If we have, yes. And also SKA.
Yeah.
Probably.
Everybody wants their coffee, so I guess we'll be back at 11 o'clock. Thank you. Good morning.